I feel like the fact that that men were so desperate that they were lusting after chair legs, like, suggests that maybe repressing all this stuff is not a good idea.
Victorian era was a very bad time for people's sexual drives. I don't know how dark you want this particular episode to get, but there are some interesting devices that came out in the Victorian era, and most of them are ouchy in the wrong spots.
Oh, Lord.
All in the name of virtue.
I'm Paige.
And I'm Megan.
And this is Spooky Science Sisters.
Hello, you're listening to Spooky Science Sisters, a podcast where we present to you a science-based and probably very giggly discussion on all things strange and unusual.
In this episode, we are going to discuss the lost city of Atlantis.
To do that, we're joined by a special guest, Sarah, who is a professional archaeologist and hosts the Archaeological Fantasies podcast. We had Sarah on our show for our Roanoke episode, which would have been almost a year and a half ago, which is crazy.
Holy crap, yeah.
I know.
It feels like it was like 2 months ago.
Yes, it does not feel like it. Like the podcast, I'm pretty sure our 2-year anniversary is like imminent. Like, I think it's days away.
Congratulations.
I think you're right.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, Sarah, since it's been a while, would you mind reminding our listeners who you are and what you've got going on?
So I am a person. I live on the planet Earth.
Great.
Yeah, I just gotta narrow these things down. So I'm a professional archaeologist. I have been for more years than I care to admit to. I'm not going to lie, I'm kind of going through a career shift, which a lot of people at my age do at this point in archaeology, because like you're either like committed to a company at this point, or you're breaking down slowly, and I'm in the latter group. It's a very physical job. I don't think people understand how hard field work can be. Yeah, I mean, even when you're doing it right, it just wears you down. It's just a very physical job. And I'm old, so so what I've got going on right now is actually, if you guys wouldn't mind, I'd like to hype a podcast that I just started in February.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go for it.
So I started a podcast in February, and I say I because like I'm on it, but I am one of the co-hosts of the Digging to the Other Side podcast, which is another archaeological based podcast, but this one is focused on archaeology through the lens of Asian American archaeologists and Asian Canadian archaeologists. And all of my co-hosts are Asian hyphenated archaeologists because they're from Canada and from America. Well, America, yeah, but you know, we're the US, we're everything. And then there's Canada.
Right.
But they're all Asian archaeologists, and the podcast itself doesn't necessarily focus on Asian archaeological sites, though it has been recently, but it is about archaeology, and my co-hosts are all very friendly, all very funny guys and girls. And we like to pick fights with people on the internet. So,
excellent.
But that's what I've been doing recently is focusing on putting that one together, getting it edited, getting it up on the internet, and getting people to listen to it. So that would be great if everybody could go give it a click.
Yeah, we will definitely include a link to that in the show notes so that people can go straight over there.
That would be
after
awesome.
They're done here.
Right? No, exactly. Yeah. Please finish listening to this one and then go listen to the 4, possibly 5 at the time episodes that will be up on the website.
Woohoo! And this won't be released for a while, so there will probably be a lot.
There
of
might
episodes.
Be more than 5.
You have so much faith in me.
All right. So so we're super glad to have you back. We're excited about the topic. But before we get to that, we are going to do our usual something spooky.
Woo!
So, Megan, did anything spooky happen to you in the last couple of weeks?
No. My only listen, I can't ever remember anything when we do this, so it's like, why do we keep doing it? We don't know, but it's our chance to give a life update. So my something spooky officially this week is how expensive children's play sets are.
Yep.
Because I just had to spend a terrifying amount of money to put one in our backyard for my daughter's birthday. Oh, so. Wow.
You're like talking like the big play sets.
A big one. Yeah, it's pretty big. We're like, all right, we're going to do it. She loves being at the playground so much, but it was like, whoa, this is terrifying. Anyway, so that's it. Paige, do you have anything for this week?
You already said this, but my something spooky is how frequently I forget what my something spooky is.
Yes.
Because
I saw your note and just stole it.
Yeah. I like the worst thing is I don't know why this is so terrible, but I had something this week or last week that happened to me and I was like, that was terrifying. I'm going to talk about it. And then clearly my brain just doesn't work quite right anymore.
I think there have been multiple things where I thought like, yeah, I got to remember this.
Yeah.
Nope. Never do. I really need to start a note on my phone.
Yeah, that's also what I need to do.
And then actually follow through.
Also, another not really something spooky, something that I want to tell you is that while looking at stuff for this episode, I realized that I have never seen the Disney movie Atlantis. What is it? The Lost Empire? Is that what it's called?
I have not seen it either.
Nor have I ever seen an Aquaman movie.
Oh, I didn't know Aquaman was supposed to be from Atlantis, but I guess it makes sense considering he's coming from beneath the ocean.
You're losing your geek points. that one's a hard lost geek point right there.
I know. We're a Marvel family.
That was hard. We don't acknowledge the other one.
We don't acknowledge the other universe. No,
speak of it in this house, even though it's older. That's actually very fitting. No, like the DC universe is slightly older than the Marvel universe. In general, and DC has Atlantis, so it's just kind of interesting that Atlantis is supposed to be like the oldest of the old.
Yeah,
it's supposed to predate everything. So if you think about it, like Atlantis is like DC, where no one acknowledges that their movies are good because they all suck. And then Marvel's like the real world, where there's a lot of crap that goes boom, but it's entertaining.
Where though? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's been a while since I saw the Wonder Woman movie. Where is she supposed to be from? Because she's from like a hidden island situation.
She's just from a. I could go ask my partner. He knows all of these things, but I don't think we have 4 hours. but yeah, she is from a hidden island of Amazons.
Of the Amazons, right? Yes. Okay. Okay.
I know nothing. Nothing about any of this. Like, you could have told me Wonder Woman was from Ohio and I would have been like, yeah, okay. Sounds good. Never seen that either.
I want to make a joke that like one of the actresses was from Ohio, but I don't think that's true either. So like I would completely be lying to you at that point. There have been several over the years and I'm just like, could one of them have been from Ohio? No, probably not.
So, Sarah, do you have anything spooky that you would like to share that's happened since, a year and a half ago when we talked to you on your last?
Or just recently, whatever.
Well, I mean, wow, okay, a year and a half ago. So I found this really cool site that it's not a site, it's an abandoned Japanese garden.
Ooh.
Yeah, and it's closed to the public, which means I need to get creative. I haven't decided if I'm going to like accidentally stumble into it one day while walking through someone's backyard, or if I'm going to like attempt to find who owns the property and call them and ask them if I can wander around it. But I was driving past it and the little... I know pagoda is not the right word, but the little like houses, they're not house, but anyway, they're like shelters. Anyway, they just kind of, there's a lot of bamboo around here because it was very ornamental and like the Victorians ruined everything. And so there's a lot of bamboo in Pennsylvania. And so that's not an unusual thing to be driving along and just see like literal bamboo forests.
Yeah.
And so, I'm driving down this super curvy road and it's bamboo on both sides. I'm just like, doo, 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 it's Pennsylvania. And then out of nowhere, you take one of these curves because we don't have straight roads in Pennsylvania. This just like, it's like out of a horror movie. It was like a perfect horror movie setting. And it's just like this mostly dilapidated, Japanese style, like, shelter house. Is it's just like completely halfway fallen into the road. It's so close to the road, and the fence around it is just like, obviously I'm not the first person to have the idea that maybe they could just oops into the property. So it was just, and of course it's like dusk, so it's like the perfect time of day to discover an abandoned area, and it was just really cool. Like, it was very it was very cool, and I get eager chills every time I go by it. I want to go in and investigate and see, you know, because you know there's stories. And it's probably just an ornamental garden that was, again, put up by the Victorians because, you know, they had money and nothing else to do. But because it's been a year and a half, I also, like, most recently just watched this really killer movie out of Korea, actually, which is considered one of the first and best found footage films.
Ooh.
Found footage horror films. And it's called, I'm going to butcher it. It's called G-I-J-I-N. So however that's said. And then it's also called Haunted Asylum. And it's really good. Highly recommend it. It is one of the first movies that I've watched in a very long time that actually had a scene in it that I was just like, okay, that's fucking creepy. I'm gonna have to turn the light back on now for a minute, because that one creeped me out a little. It even made my cats jump, which is not actually that hard, but to get all three of them at the same time was pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, I particularly love found footage horror movies, so I'll put that on the list.
I don't recommend found footage films ever. I would highly recommend this one. I think everyone would enjoy it. It's in Korean, I will tell you that.
Yeah,
well, that's gonna have to watch it in subtitles.
Great. So that is something spooky, and now I think we should just jump into talking about Atlantis and asking Sarah all of our super obnoxious devil's advocate questions.
Ooh, devil's advocate. Oh, okay.
No, I don't have that many. It's fine. But I think, Paige, you should start us out, because you took these notes about where the legend originates.
Yeah. And feel free to jump in whenever, Sarah.
I will.
Yeah.
So as far as, I want to say we know, but I'm going to go ahead and say as far as I know.
No, drag Megan into this.
Atlantis is really first mentioned in Plato's dialogues, Timaeus and Critias, in 360 BC. Mm-hmm. And in these dialogues, it's described as a large island that predates Plato by like almost 9,000 years. It's located in the Atlantic Ocean, beyond what is called the Pillars of Hercules, which is just northeast of the Strait of Gibraltar.
Is it?
Is it not?
So the problem with the landmarks that in the myth is that, you know, that because that's one of the things that a lot of people who try to prove Atlantis fall back on is like, oh, there's these markers, you know, we've got the Gibraltar, because they assume, because they take this one mention of a landmark and then they bring that into the real world map. Well, that mention of the landmark is from how many years, how many thousands of years ago?
Yeah.
And you're comparing it to a map of the known world today. It's not the same.
Got it.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because in Plato's work, it's mentioned that it's beyond the Pillars of Hercules, but whether or not that's actually located where it's located on maps today, that's
so,
what you're saying.
Yeah, so people have gone back and decided like, oh, this is where that was.
Yeah.
Well, and we're not even positive what they mean when they say the Pillars of Hercules. That could have been a number of things, which is another one of the fallbacks. But that's why I said keep going. There's a lot here.
Okay. So in the dialogues, the Atlanteans are described as wealthy, technologically advanced, and a very powerful society.
And it was my impression that sort of like this whole thing, he writes it more as like a thought experiment or an allegory. Like it's not... Yep. So that's supposed to be literally about a place.
There you go. Also, were they described as being technologically advanced, or were they described as being modern?
I don't know. I mean, probably just modern. And then people... have interpreted it to mean like, oh, a technologically advanced. That's a good point, though. It's like, it's because there's so... Yeah, there's so much... like crap rolled up in like the Atlantis mythology that it's like easy to slip into language that doesn't make sense, but not your fault, Paige.
It's not your fault at it's, all. Well, it's impossible. It's crazy when you look this up, how much information there is guaranteeing that this existed to like find the stuff that even questions it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So yes, in this story, or at least the interpretation of the story, there is a war between Atlantis and Athens. Sorry. Mm-hmm. The Athenians win and end up stopping whatever invasion of Athens that is occurring. And then shortly after the war is won, there is mention of catastrophic floods and earthquakes, which basically cause Atlantis to disappear beneath the sea.
Right. The Athenians were able to hold the Atlanteans at bay. The gods stepped in and destroyed Atlantis. But it's okay, because neither of these groups are real people.
I mean, the Athens are real people. Although I guess not 9,000 years ago.
Right.
Never mind. Sorry.
Right.
I had to think about the time.
It's okay. It's called a thought experiment. For a reason. Like, this is why earlier when we were like, you know, there's nothing logical about the Atlantis story anymore. And I'm like, well, that's because the intelligent part has been lost. This mm-hmm. was meant to be a thought experiment to teach these all young men how to think logically and how to imagine a situation and then work their way through the situation. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've ever taken a logic class or a theory class or, you know, navel gazing class, I'm sure I'll get hate mail for that one. That's what they do. They're teaching you to think, you know, and you don't learn to think by just staring at a blank wall. You have to you put your mind through exercises. This is a mental exercise. It's not a bad one. Plato says, imagine an advanced civilization, the best civilization that you can think of. Imagine this perfect group of people and then send them to war. That was the assignment. And so that's what they did. And this is the part that everybody seems to kind of like glaze over. The Atlanteans were the bad guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were supposedly advanced and they were like civilized and cultured and all this good shit. They were bad guys. They were trying to take over the world. They were trying to destroy the Athenians.
Yeah, so it's from this Live Science article titled Lost City of Atlantis, Fact or Fable, written by Benjamin Radford. And he says, though today Atlantis is often conceived of as a peaceful utopia, the Atlantis that Plato described in his fable was very different. In his book of Encyclopedia of Dubious Archaeology, Professor of Archaeology Ken Fetter notes that in
Fader.
It's Fader. Oh, no.
Ken Fader notes that in Plato's story, Atlantis is not a place to be honored or emulated at all. Atlantis is not the perfect society. Quite the contrary. Atlantis is the embodiment of materially wealthy, technologically advanced, and militarily powerful nation that has become corrupt by its wealth, sophistication, and might.
And that was the point. That was the point of the thought experiment, was that this group of people, they had everything. And because they had everything, they had completely lost touch with the world. Mm-hmm. And that's why the gods stepped in, because, you know, back in the day, if you were too arrogant, the gods would do stuff about it, because gods. You know, because the gods are perfect people as far as the Greeks and the Romans are concerned, too. So, and that was sarcasm. I apologize.
I feel like we could use some godly intervention for some people on this planet.
Great allegory. Really. If you want to think about Atlantis as like a warning of sorts. I mean, like, you can apply that idea to a lot of the situations that are going on today. You know, you've got a very powerful militaristic group, and you could assign that title to anybody, really.
In the first world, I can think of a couple countries.
Right. I mean, there's a perfect example going on today, but I mean, really, you could compare it to any of us at any point, any of the larger at any point. You know, you go in and start bullying a smaller country or a smaller culture group because you want what they have, usually land or resources. You know, and now suddenly the underdog, which is the smaller group, you know, they do better than they should, and then eventually the gods are like, hey, okay, we're done, and then
this is feeling shockingly timely.
It really is.
I mean, it, Okay, so history does repeat itself. That's the sad part about history.
Yeah. I mean, I can say it out loud, but it's like, the things that you're saying, I was like, oh, this sounds an awful lot like what's going on in Ukraine right now.
Right. And this fable is how old?
When was it? 360 BC. So 2400 years old.
Exactly. So yeah. how much has humanity changed?
That hurts. Here we are for yet another.
Here we are for what we thought would be a more giggly episode, and we're down again.
Mom had a great time. Keep it coming.
I'm not going to read this part. I want to know your thoughts. And then if I have to go into my notes, I will. I have in my notes, like, I imagine you're going to have thoughts about this. So, Ignatius Donnelly.
What about my good friend Ignatius Donnelly?
So, I don't have much about him. Basically, a politician turned writer. In 1882, he writes Atlantis, the Antediluvian World.
Yes.
And he writes about how he believes Plato's writings are factual, or at least mostly factual, minus all the, I believe he said, supernatural stuff.
Because Ignatius was a logical person.
Yeah, uh-huh. Right. And
like
he,
all politicians.
he also suggests throughout this book that all known ancient civilizations were descendants of the lost land.
Oh, yes. Lord.
So this is what I believe you have thoughts about.
Well, okay, so I do. Donnelly's a product of his time. He's also not the first person to have these thoughts. He's just the first mm-hmm. person to publish them and get popular with them. So on the one hand, like, Donnelly, looking at Donnelly's writings from 2022, yeah, they're ridiculous. They're ridiculous. They make no sense.
Yeah.
Donnelly's kind of a crackpot. You know, you can throw all these labels at him if you want to. And I think maybe some of those things are probably true, even during that time period. But mm-hmm. if you also, you have to look at Donnelly from where he's coming from. And in that time period, archaeology was a very new field. It wasn't even a field yet. It was still, you know, antiquarians running all over the place going, I found a rock, therefore, you know, I've proven the Bible. And that was another thing that was really, important to them was proving, the Victorians were very adamant about proving that the Bible and other fictitious places were real, because it was important to their worldview, particularly the biblical ones, but this one also comes into play. So it's not outrageous that Donnelly proposed that Atlantis and other fictional worlds were real. It was at Donnelly's time within the realm of possibility. This is not me endorsing Atlantis in any way, shape, or form. However, where Donnelly becomes a problem is when, well, first off, he starts this idea that all civilization is descent from Atlantis, which creates the father, the mother culture thing that we still deal with today. Donnelly himself, of course, was white European, which, you know, at the time of this era, you know, the pinnacle of human evolution, of cultural and social evolution, was white European culture. So you can kind of figure out where I'm going with that one. So that's the thing. Like, Donnelly begins this downward slide with the Atlantis idea. He's also the one that kind of cleans up the image of Atlantis. Like, he takes it from being the bad guy to creating this utopic world where everybody had everything they needed because it was perfect. It was the perfect society.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So he starts a lot of the things that we still hear about Atlantis today in the 1800s. So in the year 2022, we have advanced science. You know, we have become Atlantis, if you would. We have the knowledge base. We have the technology. We've surveyed a good chunk of the known world. We know what we're looking for if we're looking for a completely submerged continent, mm-hmm. let alone a submerged island. We know what these things look like in the geological records. So saying today that Atlantis is or was a real location is demonstratively false. In Ignatius's time, it could have been.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have what we have.
Right. That makes sense.
Now, his ideas are problematic. They survived. The worst parts of his ideas have survived, unfortunately, and that is the racism and the concept of, like, white superiority, basically.
Mm-hmm. So that brings us to, and I literally had this in the notes, I was like, we are definitely going to talk about racism here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are.
Yes. So that brings us to Lemuria.
Oh, Lemuria. Beautiful which Lemuria.
Which is another lost continent that was hypothesized by a zoologist named Philip Sclater in 1858. And he proposed that Lemuria sank into the Indian Ocean, but before that was a bridge between Madagascar and India, thus explaining the distribution of lemurs between those two land masses and dissimilarities to those that he observed in Africa and the Middle East, basically saying they couldn't have migrated across these existing land masses. There must have been something that connected them at one point, which I didn't actually realize until I was reading about this, that this was related to lemurs, which seems sort of silly now.
Hence the name of the continent, yes.
Yes. Of course, now, just as you were saying, we didn't have then what we have now. We know that these common fossils are just evidence of plate tectonics and show where continents used to be joined together in a single landmass. So I'm like very tickled that this sort of like comes back to like people just didn't understand geology.
Well, I want to go through my copy of Dubious Archaeology. To quote Fader, Scatler was engaging in valuable and valid scientific speculation.
Yes.
And that's the part that people need to understand. At the time that he was making the speculation, it was valid.
Yeah, I don't blame him. He's trying to explain actual observations that he's making about the natural world.
Right. And his was speculation. There was never a point where he was like, no, this is real, because that's how science works.
Yeah.
You know, you put a hypothesis out there and then it gets tested and it is found that there is no landmass, but there never has been a landmass as far as we can tell to connect things. The problem with Lemuria, or Lemuria, or however we want to pronounce it, is that the Atlantis people got a hold of it. Lemuria is sometimes referred to as Atlantis, and it is sometimes referred to as its own thing. But there are large groups of people that believe that Lemuria is a real place. And of course, if it's a landmass, it must have had people on it, and those people must have been awesome because reasons. And therefore, when those people were lost to whatever it is that happened to this non-existent landmass, then it must have been catastrophic. Ergo, it's just Atlantis.
Gotcha.
It's just the Atlantis story, and someone changed the name and added Lemuria on it because this guy said that at one point.
But so diving in, I guess, a little bit more to what you were saying. So I was sort of under the impression that Lemuria and Atlantis are thought of as their own things. Like Atlantis is in the Atlantic and Lemuria like supposedly sank into the Indian Ocean.
Yes. And you're not wrong. They are often considered two separate locations.
Yes. So I guess in thinking of them as separate things, it's in 1870 when a German biologist named Ernst Haeckel, I don't know. Paige, you took German.
Yeah, it's probably more like Haeckel.
That's probably Haeckel.
Suggests that not only did Lemuria exist, but this is where we get the idea that it's where mankind originated. So like similar to the Atlantis idea that like they were the original people. And he claims, and this is a quote from one of the articles I read, that the Lemurians migrated to India as their continent sank and became the Aryans. And I was like, oh no.
Bum, bum, bum.
I was like, no, German biologist. Oh, this is going south.
To be somewhat kind, Aryan wasn't always a bad word.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Okay.
But it is now. So.
Yes. Well, I just like, I saw that and I was like, oh.
No, you should have. Did the right thing. Yeah, no.
You did the right thing.
No, you did the right thing.
So much like Lemuria was the proposed bridge for the lemurs to make it from Madagascar to India. Haeckel's ideas are the bridge that get us to a cultist.
Theosophy.
Cult leader.
Theosophy. Yes. That was the word I was looking for earlier.
Yes. Helena Blavatsky. So she latches on to this as part of the mythology of her religion, Theosophy.
Okay, first off, Theosophy is not a religion.
Okay, what is it?
Theosophy is a theology.
Okay.
Yeah, theology is more like the study of the beliefs, where religion is an organized thing, right?
Right. I mean, the theosophists, they still exist. Theosophy, as far as I understand, does have some what we would consider ritual in it, but it is
okay.
It's kind of more like the Church of Satan, where it's just kind of done because it is understood that it helps put you in the right mindset. It's not exactly okay. done because there's belief in a deity or a set of spirits or a set of gods or anything like that.
Okay.
I don't know why I felt like I needed to defend Theosophy. I think I was just excited that I remembered what the hell it was all of a sudden.
Listen, I'm glad to be corrected.
Sorry about that.
You're fine. No. Okay. So the mythology of this theology is born and we get the Lemurians. She puts it out there that there she latches on this idea that they are the origination of mankind. Supposedly they could reproduce asexually, and then it's when they discover sex that they became amoral. Yep. And that caused their continent to sink into the sea.
Again, a product of its time. The Victorian era believed that the exposure of your ankles made you to the point where they would even cover the ankles of their furniture so that the men folk would not get randy. So
wait, that's where skirts on chairs come from?
Yep.
That is
serious.
Kind of hilarious.
There used to be it's not just what do they call them? They're basically like leg warmers for chairs and table legs and piano legs.
Gotcha. I was thinking like a bed skirt or whatever.
A bed skirt is also there to protect the leggings of the bed, but it's also to kind of control dust also. I mean, yeah, it has a purpose, but yeah, a lot of the trappings of like covering the bottom part of furniture was because we have to hide the legs because apparently men would, there's a lot of jokes to make right now, but the concept was that an ankle was a very bad thing to expose.
I feel like the fact that that men were so desperate that they were lusting after chair legs that maybe repressing all this stuff is not a good idea.
The Victorian era was a very bad time for people's sexual drives. I don't know how dark you want this particular episode to get, but there are some interesting devices that came out in the Victorian era, and most of them are ouchy in the wrong spots.
Oh, Lord.
All in the name of virtue.
Great. Well, yes. So
I cannot get over that.
We've learned so much through you, Sarah.
And now that I've completely derailed the conversation.
Guys, I'm fine. Looking up strange bedroom toys from the Victorian era right now.
Oh, no, they're not toys.
That's what the article's calling them.
I mean, they have become toys because later generations went, oh, that's not that bad. Or sometimes ouchy in the wrong place is good. I'm not kink shaming anyone. I'm just saying this is where this stuff comes from.
Listen, of all the places that I expected the Atlantis episode to go,
this is not one of them.
I cannot say that BDSM was one of those.
Yeah, I didn't know how like kid friendly you wanted the show to be.
Oh, we are not kid friendly.
Okay, well, okay. I'm trying to lightly dance around the concept of the spiked cock cage. Because this was a thing that was put on prepubescent and pubescent boys when they were going through puberty, because it was thought that if you inflicted enough pain that they wouldn't get erections at night.
No. That's terrible.
It is. It's absolutely terrible. And it doesn't work. So all it did was create an entire generation of people that have very bad connotations with their sexual appetites, which, you know, kind of is why we're the way we are today.
Yeah. Oh, wow. My goodness.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So anyway, back to Blavatsky.
Back to this lady. So anyway.
Blavatsky.
I don't have that much more to say about it other than people still believe that the last Lemurians live inside the Mount Shasta volcano. Like, and I mean it. Like, I've been to Mount Shasta. The town by it is like all sorts of new agey, like get your aura red, and like they're crazy about it. And like, don't even get me started on the people who claim that lenticular clouds, which are often visible near the summit of the mountain and are like a very normal weather phenomenon.
I was going to say, aren't they observable near most mountaintops?
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
Yes, but people like to claim that they are cloaking devices for alien ships who are visiting the Lemuria.
And you have to bring the aliens in now. Well, when you are a 7 foot tall egg-laying hermaphroditic race of people who live in subterranean homes beneath Mount Shasta, as Ken points out, it is very difficult to get good beer inside of Mount Shasta. So at times they must venture out in their flowing white robes to visit the local convenience stores to stock up. I love Ken's writing. This is beautiful. But yeah, this concept of Blavatsky, actually, even I think I'm saying her name wrong, but Blavatsky even calls them Root Race 3, which means there's two other root races, and I believe one of them is the Atlanteans. So there are multiple groups like this that the Theosophists at the time believed in. I know that the group still exists. I don't know how much of their original theology they stick with. Again, going back to the whole idea of like product of its time, you know, this perfect, pure group of people did not fall until they were tempted by the vileness of sex, and therefore, you know, like it all went to hell after that. You know, and then also with the modern idea of, you know, alien contact, which, you know, thank you, ancient aliens. I'm not bitter about your like 17 freaking seasons and all that good stuff, but I want to go to alien cons so bad. I'm not lying.
Yeah.
I want backstage passes. I want to touch his hair and see if it's real. I mean, is it like one of those balls where you touch it and like the electrical thing comes up and follows your finger around the glass?
I think he's just constantly connected to one of those.
That dude is so fake. Like, he is, like, fake, and knows he's fake, and is, anyway, and Atlantis is often referred to as either being themselves an alien race, or being, there's so many things. Atlantis is so much. they're either aliens, or they're the first alien hybrid race, or they were always in contact with aliens, even though they were human, because, you know, they, how else could they have been so advanced?
Yeah.
Obviously, humans didn't know how to like not choke on their tongues in the morning. They needed aliens to come and hold it down so they didn't die. Sorry.
No, you're fine. It's fine. It is sort of infuriating to read about. And then I imagine if you're actually an archaeologist, it's very infuriating to read about. Yes. So one thing that has stemmed from this, and Sarah knows what's coming because I tagged her in this on Twitter.
Yes, but thank you for that.
If there are two lost continents, then they must have been aware of one another.
Yes.
So now there's like whole stories that people have created about the Lemurians and the Atlanteans being these advanced societies of like basically godlike beings who went on to destroy each other in a nuclear war.
So the Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, here we go.
To bring us back to India.
The Bhagavad Gita is often referred to by ancient alien believers as proof that aliens were not only on the planet, but active and having conflicts with themselves. Because the Bhagavad Gita, and I apologize if I'm saying it incorrectly, but there is a description of a heavenly war. And the description of the heavenly war describes, you know, heavenly vehicles and loud booms and lights and the things you would expect if, like, you saw a really good storm or gods were fighting. But of course, you know, the lightning bolts of Zeus are also alien technology. So we're you just have to keep these things in mind when I'm telling you this story. This is what these people believe. And so to move from that, like, the Bhagavad Gita is, if we are to believe that, that is describing alien nuclear warfare, because that's what it is claimed to be doing, even though it's not, then making that leap from the Bhagavad Gita and it's clearly alien warfare, saying then that there are now two lost civilizations, and we have Atlantis and Lemuria, and obviously Plato was aware of this because he mentioned Atlantis, and therefore Lemuria must then be the Athenians, and that's how they destroyed each other. It wasn't the gods, it was actually their nuclear technology going off. There's also, like, a lot of this can be traced to the influence of, again, ancient aliens, because these ideas didn't exist until, I think, von Däniken was the first person to put in writing the idea of the Bhagavad Gita describing nuclear warfare. So von Däniken published Chariots of the Gods in the 70s. It was in the 70s at some point, because that's when science lost its grip with reality. You know, television and that kind of stuff was really becoming a major part of people's lives. It was easy to publish popular books on scientific ideas. I'm not slamming, I mean, I'm kind of slamming the 70s, but I'm also slamming my own profession. At that time, a lot of the scientific fields were more concerned about talking to each other than they were about talking to the public. And we know this is true because Carl Sagan himself, the great Carl Sagan, Saint Sagan, but he did come on and he said, you know, there's all this technology, and he's talking about the television and the radio.
Yeah.
There's all this technology. People are putting their ideas out there. Some of these ideas are not great, and there's no rebuttal from the scientific community. And he's like, if we don't defend ourselves and become part of the conversation, we're going to lose control of the conversation. And we did. That's exactly what happened. And all the ideas that you're seeing today, the Atlantis ideas and the Lemuria ideas and the other crazy ancient alien stuff, like, the popularity, when it exploded in popularity, is sometime around the 70s. And you can almost always trace it back to one or two major writers, von Däniken being one of the tops. And that's it. I mean, it, like, once you trace it back to the source material, almost all of these articles, they're all quoting von Däniken. They're all quoting Graham Hancock. They're all quoting, who's the other guy? I don't remember. I have tuned him out of my life, apparently. but they are. There's this handful of, like, OG, I don't even know what you want to call it, pseudoscience writers. And they're the ones that everybody quotes, even if they don't know they're quoting them anymore. Like, it's to the point now where, like, if you went to that guy who quote unquote wrote that article about warfare between Atlantis and Lemuria, and you said, you know, this sounds like something von Däniken wrote in his book, that person would probably be like, I don't know what you're talking about, because they probably don't know how to cite a source. So, but that's the point. Like, it's gotten so far down the line at this point, they don't even realize that they're just regurgitating stuff that was written in the 70s, and they don't even change it.
Right.
It doesn't evolve. It's the same stuff. Also, the planet is hollow. Sorry. That's where the Atlanteans went after the all went to the center of the earth.
Don't
have time for Hollow Earth tonight.
I live with the dinosaurs in the middle of the planet.
My brain will actually explode. Okay.
Yes.
So now we're going to get into, I don't know, I called this the science portion of the episode slash me trying to make some sort of reason out of this. Potentially just driving Sarah crazy.
This is the part earlier where she said we were going to play devil's advocate.
It's a short drive. I'm just letting you know. It's like down the driveway, not to the mailbox and back. It's all you get.
Fine. Okay. This whole thing about the Lemurians and the Atlanteans and there being these past like industrial societies, like these past technologically advanced societies, at least like in the way that we would describe technologically advanced. So I did find an interesting paper, and admittedly, I did not get to dive into it as much as I hoped.
Is this the one you sent me?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm hoping that you have a couple thoughts about it. But so, okay. So this is a paper that I found in the International Journal of Astrobiology by Schmidt and Frank from 2018. Uh-huh. And this is more so supposed to be like on the astrobiology side of things. So like looking at,
I want to put out there right now, I am in no way qualified for that paper.
I'm only like semi-qualified for it as a geologist who's like worked adjacent to astrobiology people.
Yeah, yeah.
But I at least wanted to mention it. I will put a link to it in the show notes just because I thought it was an interesting idea in that like these authors claim that they're trying to look into the feasibility of there being a lost city or society and what would need to be there in order to find evidence of them. So they point out that we've had industrial civilization on Earth for about 300 years. Like that is it. And out of the 4.5 billion years that our planet has been around. And we've had complex life on Earth for about the past 400 million years. Mm-hmm. So since the Silurian, which is a geologic time period. Mm-hmm. And so this is called the Silurian hypothesis. So basically they're positing like, could an advanced society have existed before, died out, and everything now is like the second go around?
Okay.
Like, would we be able to find evidence of this older society?
When I was like, I don't know, 10, 11, 12, used to legitimately sit up at night and think about this. And like, it would keep me up at night.
It's a great thought experiment.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because even not reading the paper, I mean, I did attempt, but the methods section, I'm not going to lie, the methods section's over my head. I'm not that kind of a scientist. So I read the abstract. I read the introduction. I skimmed the methods because that was all I was going to be able to do. I think that's something that people need to understand is like, it's not a failure of your personal intelligence that you cannot understand a scientific paper. It's okay to read a scientific paper and go, that made no sense. And it's
fine.
Oh,
I do it all the time.
Right. But that's like, just because you've read an archaeological report doesn't mean you're suddenly an archaeologist. Like it's okay to not understand what you're reading. It doesn't mean you're dumb.
That's the nature of, I mean, just to piggyback on that, like that is the nature of journals is that journal articles for the most part are written for an expert audience.
Right.
So there's like a baseline level of like, here are the things you should know if you're in this field. And like, we're going to write above that.
Yeah.
So
there's an assumption of knowledge when you're reading these papers.
Right. And like, so if you don't have that baseline knowledge, a lot of it is like not going to make any sense, or you're just going to get stuck down a rabbit hole of like trying to chase down what it all means and then down another rabbit hole.
Or
chase down what things
you're going to try to convince yourself that you do understand what's being said, and you're probably going to be wrong. And that's why I'm like, it's okay to say, that made no sense. It's again, not a personal failing. It's not a failure of intelligence. It's actually a sign of greater intelligence that you go, I didn't understand a goddamn word of that.
Yeah. Hence why responsible scientific journalism and science communication is very important in this world. Like we just talked about.
Keyword is responsible. anyway, I keep interrupting you.
I forget if you were saying something or what I was saying.
I was saying that I couldn't understand the methodology, but I did read the conclusion. And the conclusions are usually kind of a safe space to go to and read. They usually kind of try to like plain text that one. But again, there is an assumption of knowledge there. It seemed to me in the conclusion that they were saying that basically because the time period they were looking at was so far in the past, because they were just looking at like chemical signatures, weren't they?
Yes. Yeah.
And so they were looking at these chemical signatures from so far back that the chemical signatures that they were comparing to today could easily have been the same chemical signatures that you would expect from just general global global warming.
Yes.
And we do know that the planet before human habitation, long before human habitation, was too hot and it was inhospitable for life as we understand it.
Right.
So if they did receive signatures that resembled the industrial phases of human occupation, there's a really good chance that they're really just picking up the baseline, the what the planet was like at that time, and not necessarily picking up civilization. And then they also had this really great quote. Let me see if I can even find it. One would be able to fit any observation to an imagined civilization in ways that would be basically unfalsifiable. This is in their conclusion section.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, they are saying that the idea of an imagined, of an older civilization cannot be tested for. You cannot scientifically test for it because you cannot create an unfalsifiable hypothesis that it breaks the whole concept of the scientific method. If you can't prove it false, it's not a hypothesis.
Right.
And so I remember I typed this out and I said, it's the invisible teapot argument.
Yeah.
I tell you there's a teapot that's circulating the sun. You can't see it because it's invisible, but I know it's there. You can't test for it. There's no way to pick it up on any radar, it doesn't give off a signal or anything. There's no way for you to be able to know that it is there, but I know it is there. And you have to take my word for it. And that's the invisible teapot argument. And that's basically what they're wrapping up in their conclusion here. I didn't get the feeling that they truly believed that there was an older civilization and they were trying to find it. I think they were like you said earlier, if there was, what would we need to find to prove it?
Yeah.
And that's a falsifiable thing.
Right.
We do that a lot in archaeology. If I'm expecting to find a habitation site in this area, what am I looking for? I'm looking for soil stains. I'm looking for broken tools. I'm looking for bones with butcher marks on them. I'm looking for land structure or land mass that has been altered to be more favorable for agriculture or structure or stuff like that. I know what I'm looking for. If I don't see those things, then I'm pretty good saying that there's no habitation at this area.
I didn't get the impression that they were saying like, oh, we think that there was an old civilization. I basically think it was just like them running a thought experiment like, what if there was another advanced society on Earth or like even on another planet? Because I think part of the idea was like, since it's an astrobiology project and they're thinking about life on other planets, like what if we got to another planet and we were like, we didn't find, you know, a civilization, but like, would we be able to tell that one had been there before?
Right.
Yes. And so, so basically they're, like you said, trying to suss out like what the anthropogenic, meaning human signature, would look like from our civilization. What biomarkers would there be? What fossil evidence would there be? And like, this is the whole field of astrobiology. Like they're figuring out like, what are these little bugs like in like the primordial ooze of Earth? Like what kind of chemical signatures are they producing that like tell us that they were there and tell us that we had an oxygenated atmosphere and stuff? But it's like, but we can date those back to like billions of years at this point. So yeah, it's like, yeah, Earth was inhospitable. Like, we have the evidence of that. And they did start to go into stuff like, oh, like, you know, wouldn't this modern signature of climate change like look very similar to like these large scale like die-offs that have happened in the ocean from like these big anoxic events, meaning like lack of oxygen events, or like from big natural climate change that has happened over Earth's history? But it's like, I don't know, you're starting to like I got a little worried during that because I was like, well, you're starting to get into like global warming conspiracy territory. Yeah, the signatures might look the same in the fossil record, but like it doesn't tell us anything about the time that it took to get that hot or things like that.
I think it's one of those situations, because I'm like you, when I started reading the oceans things, I was like, the red flags. I'm getting the red flag.
Or, yeah, I mean, maybe their point was more like you couldn't tell the difference in that respect from a natural event. So, like, you, because, like, just, you know, the nature of chemical data, like, you can't.
Right. And that's the benefit I'm giving them. Yeah. Because they're dealing with dates that are really old.
Right. Yeah. It's not like, oh, this was 2,000 years ago. It's like, oh, this was a billion years ago. Like,
this predates life. This predates like the algae goop that became us. Like,
right.
They're looking at stuff so far back. Like, the planet was basically lava.
Yeah.
So.
Yes. So anyway, so I mean, I just thought it was interesting, like just an interesting question at least to ask, like, what if there was something so far back, or like what would you look for?
So since we have now imagined this perfect civilization in its perfect habitat of existing before detectable life on the planet, now you need to send that civilization to war.
Right.
But it's the same thing. I mean, this is.
Yeah.
This is a thought experiment. And I think at some point they even do mention that in that. I think it was in the early introduction. They were like, you know, we were thinking about this and that's what it is. And it's good. It's good to think about these kind of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's even better when you can apply science to it, because you can create a record of it. And at some point I'll have somebody who'll be like, well, what about life before life? Well, we've got a paper on that. So, and it says no. or at least not human life as we understand it, which is usually the only life you're talking about when you're trying to convince me that aliens were on the planet before there were ever aliens on the planet.
Yeah. Moving forward. So there are, quote unquote, because like I know that we know about them, so they're not lost. There are lost cities.
No, there are not.
In the world. They're not lost, but like, okay. Just hear me out.
It's like Lost Lake that's right up the river.
Yes. There are cities that have like been destroyed by major natural events. So you guys thought that we got away from this, but we didn't. Because guess what? We're back to volcanoes. But there are places like Pompeii and Herculaneum, which like, I know we're not lost. Like, we knew that they were there, just they were buried. There is a place called Hoya de Seren, which is considered the Pompeii of the Americas in El Salvador, which was covered in ash by a large volcanic eruption from the Laguna Caldera complex around 600 CE. And that is a Maya farming village, essentially, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. There is a sunken Mayan city in Lake Atitlan in Guatemala that was on a small island from around 400 BCE to 250 CE, but some major volcanic event caused the lake bed and island to drop, submerging the city under 50 feet of water. Mm-hmm. So I don't really have a lot to say other than like there have been major events that have destroyed whole cities in the past. And there are modern cities that may not exist for much longer because of things like climate change and rising sea levels, like places like Miami and New Orleans, like might get completely flooded.
I'm waiting for the day that Puerto Rico just doesn't come back, because that's
right. Yeah. They just become no longer inhabitable places, or they're underwater.
Yeah.
Okay. So thinking about this, what they have in common is obviously that they were destroyed or will be destroyed, I guess, by significant geological or natural events. So forget the fact that, like, we know that this was probably just a thought experiment and you know, this is supposed to be an allegory that Plato wrote. But, like, is it not possible that he was at least inspired by stories of the destruction of an actual city?
There is some speculation that he might have been inspired by the destruction of, I want to say, Pompeii.
So I was going to talk about Santorini.
Yeah, Santorini, I think it is. Yes. I think Santorini is the right one.
Yes. So that's what my mind goes to. And other people have made this connection too.
But even if we say that it is possible that he took inspiration for this, for the destruction end of it, Santorini was a well-known location.
Yeah.
The people in Santorini, though many of them did die, it was not a complete, like, total party kill. A lot of those people made it out. Same thing with Pompeii. Most of these catastrophic events that made a location inhabitable have survivors.
You're right. People were still around to tell the story.
I mean, yeah, a good number of those people in Pompeii just didn't wake up. And I mean, if that's the way you need to go, that sign me up for that one. But no, I mean, I'm serious. If a volcano is going to blow up and take out my city and I don't have the means to get out, I'd rather just not wake up, to be morbid. But my point is that there are survivors from almost all of these. And these refound or, you know, misplaced areas that we've relocated over time, they're not weird. There are a lot of locations that just, again, climate change. People don't understand how wide and varied climate change is, or that it's always going on. I'm not knocking man-made climate change. If you don't think that's real, I'm sorry. You need to stay after class. But we know that there are cities that we have lost. We, the global, we have lost because, you know, the tide comes up. The ocean level rises. And we know this because when the ocean level goes down, we find them again.
Yeah.
We're finding stuff in the Antarctic right now. Antarctic, nope. The Arctic. We're finding stuff up there that we're only now able to find because, you know, we've warmed the planet up to the point where everything's melting. So, but that means at some point there was habitation up there, you know? And so you could argue that these are lost groups, lost civilizations. Mm-hmm. And I mean, maybe at the time they were, but I can guarantee you none of them are a complete wipe. Yeah. Those people migrated. They moved. Yeah. They were like, man, it's getting cold. And they moved.
Yeah.
You know, and even if they got caught in a landslide or something, there's still like one or two people that probably made it. Or there's a bunch of people that were like, I'm going to wait until after you go. Mm-hmm. And then the landslide happens and they're like, see, now that's why you wait. but that's my point. Yeah. Obviously, we didn't die because we're having a podcast. And there are people that listen to this podcast who are not us. So obviously, we figured something out.
Yes.
Not to be a total dick, but
I guess just like, I don't know.
I'm just, I think I get what you're saying. Like, you hear it because I think I had read a couple places where like Plato had heard from his, you know, dad and his grandpa and blah, 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 blah. So like you hear it.
But even if he did, so.
It doesn't mean that Atlantis is real.
It doesn't mean Atlantis 100%.
Is real. I guess I'm just making, I'm making the point that like, if you hear that story through someone, and then it slowly morphs into this story of Atlantis, and like,
and then at some point somebody took it seriously, and
right,
like,
exactly, like,
Atlantis is a real place,
but it could have been inspired from a very true story that got morphed into something that was taken the wrong way. I guess is my point, or I think what Megan, what you were trying to say, maybe.
Yeah, no, and I don't have a problem with people saying that. I really don't, because it in no way impacts the reality of or the non-reality of Atlantis.
Yeah.
Right.
So
it still doesn't exist.
Yeah. It still doesn't exist. So he took, I would be more surprised if he did not take story elements from the time period that he lived in. That would be really weird.
Yeah.
Every writer you know, every book you've ever read, every bad fanfic you've ever skimmed has elements of the world that it is written in, the time period it's written in. Again, even Ignatius's stuff.
Ignatius Donnelly, going all the way back. Yeah. That's influenced by the time period that he was living in.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why the quote unquote advanced technology that the Atlanteans had didn't look anything like the advanced technology that we have today.
Yeah.
Because it didn't exist and it wasn't the thought in people's minds at the time.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I would be more surprised if he wasn't taking elements of the world around him for his thought experiments. Why wouldn't you?
Right.
But that does not in any way support the reality of Atlantis.
Sure.
Yes. But at least humor me, because I want to talk about Santorini a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Volcano, and it's very cool. And I do think it's cool.
You hear that, Santorini? You think it's cool that you're all buried under there. Sorry.
But anyway, I mean, I just think it's cool that it seems like there could be parallels between the story that Plato tells, that he, you know, makes up about this lost continent and what happened at Santorini. So this is an island that had produced several large caldera forming eruptions in the past. There's one in particular that is sometimes tied to the Atlantis myth in terms of being an inspiration, not meaning that it was in Atlantis. But this most recent caldera forming eruption is called the Minoan eruption and occurred around 1600 BCE during the late Bronze Age. Mm-hmm. And we just did our volcanoes episode a couple weeks ago. So we talked about Krakatoa then, but this was four times larger than the 1883 Krakatoa eruption.
What a great name for a volcano, by the way.
Yes. Krakatoa killed 36,000 people, produced 100-foot tall tsunamis, and would have had global effects on weather and climate. Mm-hmm. Geologists believe that this Minoan eruption that occurred at Santorini was the single most powerful explosion ever witnessed by humans. Mm-hmm. And here's what gets me is that a caldera forms when so much of this large magma chamber that has formed underneath the surface empties out, that the roof of it can't support the weight of all of the rock above. So the mountain or whatever you're talking about collapses in on itself. So like that just sounds like, you know, a continent like just disappearing beneath the ocean, because like essentially that's what happened to this island. Like it was there and then, you know, probably over the course of a couple of days, it was just catastrophically gone. Mm-hmm. and there were people living on the island. The name that this Minoan eruption comes from, the thriving Minoan civilization that was living on the neighboring island of Crete. Mm-hmm. Although people think, because there have been no human remains or valuables found on Santorini, that it seems like people evacuated. Although I might also argue that people just got completely obliterated, were left behind. But I don't know. So, yeah. But then history also shows that the Minoan civilization began its decline right around this time. And it's very possible that this eruption played into it. Like mm-hmm. their naval fleet could have been swamped by large tsunamis. You could have had cold or wet summers after, meaning like poor harvests. So I'm just like, I think there are parallels there. I would, like you said, like I would be surprised if Plato wasn't pulling from stories that he'd heard. And this seems like a very likely one to have been an inspiration. But important point, Atlantis is not real.
Well, and the other thing with like, if you want to go back to Santorini, I mean,
yeah,
I think one of the important things that you actually even said, we know where it is.
Yeah.
We know it was there. We still to this day know it was there. Again, there are survivors. I mean, you can't go interview them, but there were survivors who are people who are like, man, that's looking pretty iffy. I'm mm-hmm. thinking maybe I should not be here.
Yeah.
So like there are people that were like that got out.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's actually true that they've never found human remains. That seems a little, I'm not an expert on Santorini, so I don't know, maybe, but that would tell me that they got out. Unless they were like at ground zero, I guess. I don't know. Even in, I don't want to get that morbid, but my point is there's almost always some evidence of human remains left behind.
Right.
Even if it's just something small. But my, yeah. Anyway.
I mean, my argument was like, if you look at pictures of the island and the deposits from that eruption, like you're talking about like tens of feet of ash that were deposited. So it's like, would you really find remains? Like even like graves that were there from people living there, like they would just be totally buried. But anyway, I don't know.
You can bury things pretty deep then, and we're still going to find it if we want to. But my other point was that as catastrophic as that eruption would have been, I mean, you were mentioning the towers of ash. We know that's has a major effect on climate, not just locally, but also at a distance. I mean, that's,
yeah.
You're talking about something that probably affected a massive area. So my point is people know.
Yeah.
I mean, Santorini didn't just like, boop, vanish. It was like, oh, shit. And at that time period, probably, I mean, again, I don't like to make it sound like our ancestors were like incredibly superstitious and just like ignorant. That is something that is so damn impressive, mm-hmm. in the wrong kind of way. Like that, if I were to live through something like that, even today, mm-hmm. I would probably have a religious moment. I'm not a religious person. I mean,
right.
If I was living on an island and the island next to me just like collapsed.
Yeah.
Even if it happened over like a 3-day period, that's a thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to notice that. That's going to be shocking. And even as a logical person living in the modern era, I would still be like, damn, it's really hard to believe that there's not gods. Listen, how do you take out a whole island? I mean, think about it. Now go all the way back to, I mean, these are not stupid people. These are people who have figured out all kinds of cool stuff. Like our ancestors were not backwards folk, and that's a bad term anyway. So shame on me. But the point is like even the more logical brained ones are still going to be like, dude, maybe there's something to this gods thing, because how do you get rid of an entire island?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that's not something humans do. Mm-hmm. We do now, but it's not something they did back then.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it doesn't prove Atlantis in any way, shape or form, but I mean, it's a significant event. I would imagine there's probably a lot of stories that we don't know about that are based off of Santorini. You know?
Well, Paige is having flashbacks to the volcano episode right now because we had a lot of discussion about.
By a lot of discussion, what she means is
me rapid fire talking at Paige.
I learned about volcanoes when I had no idea what the flip she was talking about before we started the
episode. But we talked a lot about like big eruptions that have happened in the past, and there's Native American folklore about them, and just there's a lot of really cool stuff from people that witnessed these and went on to describe them as like thinking the world was ending and things like that.
I mean, so, your world is ending. That's what other people need to understand. Like a 12-foot tsunami takes out your entire fishing village. Sorry, what are you doing tomorrow?
Yeah.
I'm not playing poker. If I survive, I'm probably wondering why.
Yeah.
You know, why did the gods not kill me but took out everybody else? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's my only...
Again, doesn't prove Atlantis.
Yes, but it's at least my only plug for something that I think could be believable about any sort of like inspiration for the story is that you've had examples of, you know, places that have been utterly devastated by natural events, and that people would see that happening and could attribute it to like some, I don't know, otherworldly force. Okay. Well, anyway, I've beat the Santorini dead horse enough.
Santorini horse is a good one to beat because they do. A lot of people come back to Santorini as being actual Atlantis. Like that's a very common location. It's not. There's no reason to believe that it is.
At best, it inspired some of it.
Yeah. But it's still a thought experiment.
Yeah. So Paige, one last thing, which is turns out when we're going to eat our words a little bit because there's not a quote unquote lost continent.
Okay. But hold on, because Yes, there is, but also not really.
Yes.
if we know where it is,
it's
not lost.
So there was, or is, I guess, Zealandia, a lost continent, sort of lost, not really lost.
So basically, this is the eighth continent that we didn't know existed until very recently.
Yeah, it's like pretty cool. Like 2000, it was like really recently, right? Like
2020, yeah.
Okay. Oh, I thought it was more like 2013.
Or I guess maybe it was long ago, but I don't know. There was new stuff about it that came out like just a couple years ago. So
it's a landmass that broke off of Gondwana, which was the southern portion of Pangaea that split off into like South America, Africa, Australia, Antarctica, and now we know Zealandia. And it is made up of continental crust, but it is damn near entirely submerged underwater. It is raised almost 1 kilometer higher than the oceanic crusts around it. So that's how we know that, and it being made of continental crust, that it is in fact a lost continent, not just,
yeah, but not really lost, because like
it's, but we found it and we have it. Yeah, so New Zealand, as we already mentioned, is the largest part of Zealandia that is above water, but it's still only like 6% of the total continent. So it's like 300,000 square kilometers of the total like 4.9 million square kilometers that makes Zealandia.
Okay, so Zealandia is real. It's not Atlantis.
No, it's not Atlantis. Yeah. But like,
I don't feel like you guys are trying to argue that there isn't Atlantis. No. So don't take it that way.
I definitely wanted to mention it just because I think it is interesting if we're going to inject some science into this spooky science that like there is actually, you know, an eighth continent that we didn't know about. So continental crust tends to be very thick and very buoyant, and like basically it's floating around on the mantle. All the tectonic plates are sliding around and grinding against each other, and sometimes moving away from each other, and sometimes squishing together. But one way to make continental crust thinner, and in this case, much, much thinner, is to start to pull it apart. And so I think in this case, it's just like an extreme example where it's been like pulled apart so much and gotten so thin that it's mostly submerged and not that much higher than the oceanic crust around it.
I'm kind of surprised I haven't heard New Zealand being pegged as Atlantis.
Yeah.
Because of this, but I'm sure it is somewhere. Well, I mean, if this is something from like 10 years ago, I'm kind of surprised it hasn't started to surface yet.
Yeah.
So, okay. So let's see. Let's try to recap. Let's see. New Zealand is not Atlantis.
Yeah.
Even though I'm sure I'll start hearing that soon. Santorini is not Atlantis, though. There's a strong argument that it could be the inspiration for the story of Atlantis, mm-hmm. but that does not in any way, shape, or form prove Atlantis is real, because it's like saying like Tolkien's books that are heavily inspired by the real world, therefore Middle Earth is real. I mean,
I would love to believe that, though.
Would you, though? Do you really want to go live in Middle Earth? I mean, like, something's going to eat you. Something big, nasty, and supernatural. I don't think I would survive Middle Earth unless I was also inside like a very good civil. Anyway, we're going way off topic. I mean, it really just boils down to Atlantis isn't real. There's no evidence for it. I mean, even the guys who are trying to like get a chemical signature of a civilization that might have predated life. Keep in mind, it's predating life. Even they're like, yeah, nah, fam, we can't find anything. It was all a thought experiment to begin with. And Atlantis were the bad guys. They were the baddies. They had the skulls on their uniforms. They were the bad guys.
There you go.
Do you have any other questions about Atlantis?
Because
here's the thing with Atlantis, because now I'm going to dominate your show for a minute.
Okay.
So the problem with Atlantis is Atlantis real or not? That is no longer the issue. It doesn't, it actually doesn't matter to the argument at all of whether or not Atlantis is real, because there is a large enough group of people that believe that Atlantis is real, and you're not going to convince them otherwise. And so because of this group of people who have this belief that this is a true and real thing, and they have built a theology, a mythology around Atlantis, they know what they're looking for. They're looking for this civilization, this city that is got three rings of walls, fortifications around it, that has this massive irrigation system, that has these tall and impressive buildings that look like skyscrapers. And of course, they're all round, you know, and each, well, in each decade that we progress with this idea that Atlantis is real, the technology in Atlantis changes because it has to keep up with the time, you know. Mm-hmm. There's flying cars in Atlantis right now. When we finally do get flying cars, what's going to be the next step? Because the technology of Atlantis is always only an imaginative step beyond what we currently have. And so this is why we have this idea of nuclear war between two fake continents, you know, because like that's mm-hmm. the most devastating kind of war that we as a society, as a living human society can think of. Mm-hmm. Like what kind of war is more terrifying, more life ending, more eradicating? Because we've got these people that believe in Atlantis and they believe in this concept of the pure mm-hmm. Aryan Atlantis, you know, mm-hmm. this going back to the idea of this, you know, I want to hit the racism button as hard as I can.
Yeah.
Even reading that article that Dave shared, one of the reasons mm-hmm. why that particular article is so alarming is because that particular link, I believe the blog itself, is arguing for the superiority of the white race. And that's because mm-hmm. that race is directly descent from Atlantis. Who, of course, were perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and so these are the ideas that are braided into very, very much part of the idea of Atlantis. A lot of people see the Atlantis television shows and they're like, oh, Atlantis, ha ha ha, isn't that funny? You know, and they all get a kick out of being like, oh, Atlantis isn't real because Plato said it's just a thought experiment. And it's like, yeah, we can say that as many times as you want, but then you've got a group of people who do honestly believe that that's real. Yeah. They think that that's all just code talk. They believe mm-hmm. that there's like a hidden message in Creatus and Timaeus that Plato had. They believe that the mention of Atlantis is made throughout other dialogues as well. Mm-hmm. They like they're drawing their lines, mm-hmm. and the lines lead to white people good, everybody else sub good, you know. And they'll even break down the groups. Like this group of people is okay group. This group of people is okay. Well, they could be good, but they're not. And then there's this group of people who are just that is just. No. Yeah. And then I'm not even going to sit here and try to pick apart. Everybody's got their ideas. But the point is that like they have a hierarchy of what they consider race.
Yeah.
And it's integral to the Atlantis concepts that are out there. Mm-hmm. If you are just a casual observer, which most people are just casually observing this Atlantis idea from the outside. And that's why when you see this article go across the internet, you know, oh, Atlantis has been found, or they think they found the Atlantis might be in this part of the world.
Yeah.
That's when the majority of us go, oh, Atlantis, you know, we just kind of roll our eyes. And then you start seeing everybody on the internet. And they're like, Atlantis isn't real. It's a Plato thing. What you're not seeing is the group of people who are the reason why that article went across the internet in the first place, because they are desperate to find Atlantis. They mm-hmm. believe it is real. They believe if they find it, it's like the fatherland. They can get back to their quote unquote roots. It will prove their superiority as a racial group. They think that they can trace their genetic data back to it because they believe mm-hmm. in the concept of genes as of genetic data as like fact. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the problem with the Atlantis idea. It's mm-hmm. not the misconception. So that's why when you see people on Twitter, archaeologists and anthropologists on Twitter, who get so livid about this, mm-hmm. like they're just like foaming at the mouth over this Atlantis mm-hmm. thing. This is why.
Yeah.
It's not because of this misconception that Atlantis is or is not real. No one cares. We really don't care if Atlantis is real or not. What we care about are these groups of people that are using Atlantis as a dog whistle so that they can say that, well, I'm white. And this isn't a white guilt thing. Like they're these people that believe that they are better than everyone else just because they're pale, you know? It's like, good for you. I love burning the sun too. I guess that somehow makes me better than everybody else. I didn't realize third degree sunburn was a good thing. You know, I mean, it's that kind of shit, but it gets bad. It gets bad. It gets dark. You know, there's whole groups of people who are just, they rally around this identity. Mm-hmm. And then you get the ancient alien people who like, I know everybody wants to kind of point and laugh at the ancient alien people, but again, they tie this back to Atlantis. Atlantis is an alien race.
Yeah.
The alien race that came to Earth to help humanity. Well, what part of humanity are they helping?
Mm-hmm.
This is the part that everybody misses in Ancient Aliens. It's like, ooh, why is it always the, like, not white people that need the help? Why is it always the white people that are the hybrids?
Mm-hmm.
Who by being an alien hybrid, you know, that makes you superior. And so, again, the Atlantean people were the first hybrid species of alien and humans. Again, fair-skinned, fair-haired, blue-eyed. What does that sound like? I mean, it's not been that long, you guys. We can still draw this line.
Yeah.
You know, but that's the thing. It's not the goofy idea that's the problem. It's the underlying iceberg of it all.
Yeah.
And it's ugly and it's bad and it needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
You can still think the idea is fun. You can still, like, thought experiment your way through Atlantis. It's meant to be. I mean, please do. That's why he did this.
Yeah.
But his idea was not like, think of yourself as the perfect white race. Now go forth and smite everyone who doesn't look anything like you. That wasn't the thought experiment.
Yeah.
But that's what
also, like, importantly, the whole point was that they were the bad guys originally.
They were the bad guys. That part, like, always floored me.
Maybe don't go around stomping all over everyone because, like, you think you're so great.
The real lesson here is don't be an asshole or the gods will smite you. It's always the rule. That's always the lesson. No one ever listens.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing that because, yeah, it is super important.
Well, thank you for letting me have a tirade on the moment because I know it's an uncomfortable thing to talk about.
It's an important thing to talk about, and it was important to mention for this episode because, yeah, like, you're right. Like, it's fun to speculate and be silly about it, but yeah, we got to remember that
there's a darkness to the end of it.
Very serious, things or implications that go along with people perpetuating these ideas.
Okay, anything else? I'm going to wrap us up.
Great. Sarah's brief reminder of where people can find you before we wrap up.
Places I'm most active online are, social media wise, is Instagram and Twitter. Both of them are ArchyFantasies, A-R-C-H-Y, Fantasies, all one word. You might see me on YouTube. I'm trying to build up the YouTube channel, which is also ArchyFantasies. I've switched my blog over to the Patreon, which is to read the blog parts and stuff. It's free. You don't have to be a member to read my stuff. The things I would like to hype, though, are the Digging to the Other Side podcast, which, again, I launched in February. So please go give that a listen. They're on Anchor. The Archie Fantasies podcast, which updates about once a month right now. It's on Anchor as well. And I do the Paranormal Archaeology podcast, which it goes up every couple months. That's pretty much it. If you want to find me, just type in Archie Fantasies, and it pretty much brings up everything that I'm on.
Great.
Alrighty. That wraps up this episode on the quote unquote lost city of Atlantis.
Still not real.
the not city of Atlantis. Big thanks again, Sarah. We always have a great time. Everybody else, tune in next episode for our fourth spooky true crime episode. If you like this episode, hit subscribe and share with a friend. You can find us on TikTok at Spooky Science, Twitter and Instagram at Spooky SciPod, Facebook at Spooky Science Sisters, and at our website, SpookyScienceSisters.com. If you have any questions about previous topics or ideas for future episodes, email us at SpookyScienceSisters@gmail.com. As always, thank you for listening and stay spooky. Spooky Science Sisters is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network. For more information or to check out other shows, please visit evergreenpodcasts.com.
I'm Eliza, and I need you to listen to me. Have you ever felt so much that you don't know where to put it all? And you wonder if anyone would notice if you screamed? Because you want to. Scream for the ones they've hurt, the ones they've taken. Scream for yourself. These are my words, my story from my perspective. Because I know you'll hear other versions. Because I want you to have a chance to believe mine. Or at least hear it. If you're getting this, it it's already over. But if one of you listens, really listens, it won't be for nothing.